Naram Chaiva Narottamam Devim Sarasvatim Vyasam Tato Jayam Udirayen Nasta Prayeshwabhadreshu Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya Bhagavati Uttama Shloke Bhaktir Bhavati Naishtiki. This morning we're beginning chapter 6 of the first canto, entitled Conversation Between Narada and Vyasadeva. So as in the last chapter, as you recall, we talked about Narada's instructions on Srimad Bhagavatam, many famous verses, beautiful verses about the meaning and purpose of Srimad Bhagavatam. So today we have the topic of how to handle material setbacks. And this is relevant only for people who have problems. Anyone without problems need not attend. I see many people took advantage of that opportunity. Problem free. All right. Please turn to page 297, text 1. We're going to read the first 10 verses of this chapter, and they have nice short purports, so maybe we could just slip those in as well. Okay, so we'll read the translations and purports. Verses 1 through 10 here, starting with verse 1.
Sutta said, O Brahmanas, thus hearing about all about Sri Narada's birth and activities, Vyasadeva, the incarnation of God, and son of Satyavati, inquired as follows.
Purport. Vyasadeva was further inquisitive to know about the perfection of Naradaji, and therefore he wanted to know about him more and more. In this chapter, Naradaji will describe how he was able to have a brief audience with the Lord while he was absorbed in the transcendental thought of separation from the Lord, and when it was very painful for him.
Translation. Sri Vyasadeva said, "What did you, Narada, do after the departure of the great sages who had instructed you in scientific transcendental knowledge before the beginning of your present birth?" Purport. Vyasadeva himself was the disciple of Naradji, and therefore it was natural to be anxious to hear what Narada did after initiation from the spiritual masters. He wanted to follow in Narada's footsteps in order to attain to the same perfect stage of life. This desire to inquire from the spiritual master is an essential factor to the progressive path. This process is technically known as Saddharma Pracha.
O son of Brahma, how did you pass your life after initiation? And how did you attain this body, having quit your old one in due course? Purport. Sri Narada Muni in his previous life was just an ordinary maidservant's son. So how he became so perfectly transformed into the spiritual body of eternal life, bliss, and knowledge is certainly important. Sri Vyasadeva desired him to disclose the facts for everyone's satisfaction.
O great sage, time annihilates everything in due course. So how is it that this subject matter, which happened prior to this day of Brahma, is still fresh in your memory, undisturbed by time? Purport. As spirit is not annihilated even after the annihilation of the material body, so also spiritual consciousness is not annihilated. Sri Narada developed the spiritual consciousness even when he had his material body in the previous kalpa. Consciousness of the material body means spiritual consciousness expressed through the medium of a material body. This consciousness is inferior, destructible, and perverted. But superconsciousness of the supermind, of the supramind in the spiritual plane, is as good as the spirit soul and is never annihilated.
Sri Narada said, "The great sages who had imparted scientific knowledge of transcendence to me departed for other places, and I had to pass my life in this way." purport. In his previous life, when Naraji was impregnated with spiritual knowledge by the grace of the great sages, there was a tangible chance in his life, although he was only a boy of 5 years. There was a tangible change in his life, although he was only a boy of 5 years. That is an important symptom visible after initiation by the bona fide spiritual master. Actual association with devotees brings about a quick change in his in life for spiritual realization. How it so acted upon the previous life of Sri Narad Muni is described by and by in this chapter.
Please read on.
I was the only son of my mother, who was not only a simple woman, but a maid servant as well. Since I was her only offspring, she had no other alternative for protection. She bound me with the tie of affection.
6-7. She wanted to look after my maintenance properly, but because she was not independent, she was not able to do anything for me. The world is under the full control of the Supreme Lord. Therefore, everyone is like a wooden doll in the hands of a puppet master.
Text 8. When I was a mere child of 5 years, I lived in a Brahmana school. I was dependent on my mother's affection and had no experience of different lands.
Once upon a time, my poor mother, when going out one night to milk a cow, was bitten on the leg by a serpent, influenced by supreme time. Purport. That is the way of dragging a sincere soul nearer to God. The poor boy was being looked after only by his affectionate mother, and yet the mother was taken from the world by the supreme will in order to put him completely at the mercy of the Lord.
Now it's today's verse. Let's chant this one together, please. Tadata daham ishasya.
Tadata daham ishasya.
Bhaktanam sham abhichata.
Bhaktanam sham abhichata.
Anugraham manyamana.
Anugraham manyamana.
Pratishtam disham uttaram.
Pratishtam disham uttaram.
Tadata daham ishasya. Bhaktanam sham abhipshata. Anugraham manyamana. Pratishtam dishamuttaram. Please chant. Tadatat aham ishasya. Bhaktaham sham abhipshataha. Anugraham manyamanaha. Pratishtam disham uttaram. Tadatadaham ishasya. Bhaktanam sam abhipshataha. Amugraham manyamanaha. Pratishtam dishamuttaram. Akaham abhichataha. Anugraham manyamana. Pratishtam vishamutaram. Anyone else? Tada. At that time, tat, that, aham, I, ishasya, of the Lord, bhaktanam, of the devotees, sham, mercy, abhipsataha, desiring, anugraham, special benediction. Manyamanaha. Thinking in that way. Pratishtam. Departed. Disham. Uttaram. In the northern direction. Okay. Translation and purport. Zach. You got the mic handy? Thank you.
I took this as a special mercy of the Lord, who always desires benediction for his devotees. And so thinking, I started for the north.
Confidential devotees of the Lord see in every step a benedictory direction of the Lord. What is considered to be an odd or difficult moment in the mundane sense is accepted as special mercy of the Lord. Mundane prosperity is a kind of material fever. And by the grace of the Lord, the temperature of this material fever is gradually diminished, and spiritual health is obtained step by step. Mundane people misunderstand it.
So we've read about a very tragic event. This young boy becomes an orphan at the tender age of 5. So there's no social services to come and put him in a foster home. There's no relatives to take care of him. His only support was his mother, and she died. So here he is, 5. Now he's completely self-reliant. How am I going to feed myself? How will I clothe myself? How will I live? And with nothing else to do, he just starts walking towards the north. So this all takes place after he's had the association of these great devotees. So that's his one asset. And this is how Krishna has put him in such a difficult situation, because it will bring out this asset. So he responds to the death of his mother by saying, I took this as the special mercy of the Lord. So I remember once when about almost 30 years ago, I had been a devotee for 10 or 11 years, and I had a very difficult situation arise in my life. It was extremely excruciating. I was angry, it was embarrassing, I was frustrated, helpless, and I knew the philosophy that this was not happening without Krishna's sanction. So I was talking to a friend and I said, I guess this is Krishna's mercy, which is the correct thing philosophically. And my friend said, you don't really mean that, do you? And I said, no, I don't. So, what's the matter? Shashi's supposed to cut fruit. She's not there. Okay, thank you. So, this is the difference between knowledge and realization, or jnana and vijnana. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, samadama tapa shocham, shantir arjavam eva cha, jnanam vijnanam, astikyam, brahmakarma, svabhavajam. The qualities by which a Brahman works are equanimity, peacefulness, cleanliness, austerity, knowledge, and wisdom, and honesty is in there also. So the difference between knowledge and wisdom is nicely illustrated by the following story. When Einstein was first becoming well known, before he became well known, he was touring Germany giving lectures. So he would go from lecture to lecture, and he had a driver to take him from place to place. So as he was traveling, he would practice the lecture that he was going to give. And this driver heard it over and over and over again. So at one time, while Einstein was practicing, he broke off in the middle of a sentence, and the driver finished it for him. And Einstein says, you know this? The driver said, I've heard it so many times. So Einstein said, you know, I'm not feeling so well. Why don't you do this next lecture for me, since you know this subject, since you know it so well? And so the driver agreed. This was before Einstein was so famous that he'd be recognized. So the lecture was held, the assembly of scholars was there, and the driver came in, and he gave the entire lecture flawlessly. And afterwards there was applause. And then the moderator stood up and said, "Very nice, thank you, Dr. Einstein. Now we will have questions and answers." So a very distinguished scholar, elderly scholar, stood up and began asking a question. And it was a very involved question. It took several minutes for him to complete it. So when he completed his question, everyone looked at the driver. And the driver said, "This question is not very significant. Even my driver could answer this question." So he called in Einstein from the car to answer the question. So the point is, we may know the right thing to say, but if we do not have realization, will it satisfy our hearts? And the answer is no. It's not just a matter of parroting it's Krishna's mercy. See? This will not help us handle difficulties in our lives. So before I go on, I just wanted to ask if anyone would like to share some personal setback they have had in their lives, and make it on the profound side, one that you've had personally or that you know of someone else having, just to kind of underscore this point. Anyone like to volunteer an example? This is a very pious, sinless group. Okay, oh, there's one sinner. Krishna.
One time, they didn't bring out the instruments to Krishna lunch for the Harinam. And I was going to walk back and get them, but they gave me the keys to the van because they said it would be less time. And as I was getting out of the van, I shut it with one door, with one hand, and the other hand was coming out of the door, but didn't make it all the way out. So I put these two fingers got slammed into the door. And it hurt a lot, and this nice devotee, Devakarya, helped me bandage it up. And I was thinking that how that Krishna, I know the material world is a miserable place. Why is this reminder necessary? So I didn't really agree with Krishna that it was a necessary reminder. I thought I had enough knowledge. But
that may not be profound, but it made me wince just to think about it. So you remember that the conditioned soul has four defects, right? There's imperfect senses, there's illusion, mistakes, and finally cheating. And yes, in spite of all these other defects, we present ourselves perfect. So this cheating propensity also translates over to this topic in this way. When we take up Krishna consciousness, part of it is understanding philosophically that this world is a place of miseries. And so we have a tendency to make a deal with Krishna. Yes, I will accept this place is a place of miseries. Now that I have accepted this, I presume that you will not find it necessary to educate me any further. And I will be able to skate around these miseries that I see everyone else is having, because I understand already it is a place of misery. I do not need to go back for this lesson. See, anyone ever kind of think this way? There is a little tendency to think that now we're exempt. But here even Narada Muni has this very profound tragedy in his life. So again, these symptoms of a really heavy event. There's a lot of pain. There is this sense of helplessness to be able to do anything about it. you know, you're in pain physically, and you can't seem to stop it. You may be in pain emotionally, and it just doesn't seem to go away. You may be in anxiety mentally, and you can't sleep at night or can't put your mind at ease. These are symptoms of Krishna's involvement in this, where it actually makes us helpless. When we realize that there's no way to materially address the difficulty that we have, then we're in a helpless position. So that is the proper response, actually, to a setback. If we are still hanging on to the idea that we can control things, or that we can take or leave Krishna consciousness, right? Like, in other words, devotional service is an option, which it is. It's always an option. But we haven't really made up our minds that this is what the purpose of life is. And we're thinking, this is a nice way to live life for a while, but I can always go back to clubbing or partying or business and finance or whatever it was that I was previously motivated to do. So, when some kind of suffering gets us to that point of helplessness, this is a good sign that Krishna is educating us further. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati said that one who walks the path of God will find it strewn with thorns. Why is that? Because whatever attachments we have, or whatever ego we have, or whatever unhelplessness we have, will be taken away as long as we keep walking in that direction. We keep walking toward Krishna, we're going to find these thorns piercing our feet. So we cannot preempt them. In fact, it's just the opposite. Very often, it seems those who are on the path of spiritual life seem to undergo more difficulties. Just look at our Krishna consciousness movement, for example. We are just a bunch of devotees. We really enjoy serving God. We demonstrate that daily by rising early, taking trouble to come together and practice the process. So we are, by all measures, a rather pious lot, a rather devoted lot of humanoids, and yet we are chronically poor. All except for Clayton. I don't know, he's loaded, but the rest of us. The devotees who are well-to-do, it's fine to be poor or rich. That doesn't matter, devotional service. It's not like the kind of work ethic in our culture that if you're really pious, you'll be rich. Otherwise, you're not right with the Lord. No, we know that there are Sudamas and there are Pundarik Vidyanidhis, very wealthy, very poor devotees. They're both nice. And yet, our society is very poor by comparison to other, let's say, religious organizations of our size. I think I mentioned this story one time that, right, I went to visit a church for sale in High Springs with some devotees, and they had a nice church that was a big facility. We were interested in using it for a school. But so we asked the pastor who was showing us around, what are you doing? And he said, well, we're moving to a new location. And he described it, and they're building on so many acres and such a big building. And we were all impressed and said, well, how many families do you have in your congregation? And he said, oh, about 100. And, of course, in our Alachua community, we had 200 or more families. But nowhere, I mean, the scope of even buying their used church was beyond our capacity. So we have this tradition somehow being poor. Anyone know why this is? It's because, yeah, because of Bhrigu Muni. Right? Bhrigu Muni? The sages were gathered asking who is supreme, Brahma, Vishnu, or Shiva. And Bhrigu said, I'll find out. So he went to see Brahma, who was his father. And Brahma came in the room, and Bhrigu did not stand up, did not show him respect, committed an offense of the mind. And Brahma got angry. And Bhrigu apologized and left before he got killed. Then he went to see Lord Shiva, his brother. And Lord Shiva wanted to embrace him. My dear brother, you've come. And he said, oh, don't touch me. You've got a garland of skulls. You're covered with ashes. Ooh, creepy. And Lord Shiva became very angry. And if it were not for Parvati's intervention, he would have killed Bhrigu. So Bhrigu made the offense of the words. And then he went to see Lord Vishnu, who was lying, having his feet massaged by Lakshmi. So Bhrigu came up to him, and without a word, he kicked him in the chest, committed an offense of the body, corporeal offense. And Lord Vishnu said, oh, my dear Bhrigu, has my chest hurt your foot? He did not become angry at all. He was completely peaceful. So Lakshmi, on the other hand, said, I will never let the Brahmins have any money ever again. So this was the reason Brahmins tend to be poor. And poverty is a kind of suffering. It's a kind of difficulty in life. So this makes us helpless. This is the point. When Krishna is very kind to a devotee, Harishye Tadhanam Shanai, he takes away his money. And why does he take away his money? What happens when you lose your money? Yeah, nobody likes you anymore. If you have problems, nobody wants to be around you. You become a leper, a pariah. Like Akendra Prabhu sings in his songs. My neighbor said, how are you doing? I said, my whole life is ruined. I'm a mess. I need professional help. Neighbor said, next time, keep it to yourself. Yeah, when you have problems, yes, nobody wants to be around you. So this is how Krishna responds to the sincere prayers of a devotee. Because the devotee may still have some lingering material desires or material attachments, Krishna says, all right, you want to serve me? I'll take them away. And then the devotee says, well, let me reconsider, you know, because this is so painful. Right? But is pain a bad thing? You know, suppose you're dancing in kirtan, and, you know, it's a very crowded kirtan, and everyone's jumping and dancing ecstatically. And somebody jumps up, and then they come down very hard on your foot. They actually break your ankle. Okay? So, suppose you had no pain. So, you say, ecstasy should not stop. Let me go on dancing. So you're dancing and dancing, and after a while the jagged bone begins to protrude from your skin. And you look down and say, oh, that looks familiar. That's my bone. If there were no pain, everything would get so much worse, right? So pain is not necessarily a bad thing. It serves a purpose. It keeps us from doing things that would otherwise make things worse. So this is why Krishna allows the devotee to experience pain and suffering. It is a fact that it is not happening independently of Krishna. It seems like that. Like after 9/11, America's great religious acharya, Billy Graham. Why are we laughing? Actually, Billy Graham is a very serious Christian, a very serious spiritualist. And he made history by getting masses of people reinvigorated and interested in Christianity. And he was so prominent that he became the minister to every president from, what's his name? Before Eisenhower, there was Truman. Yeah, from Truman all the way through Bush. Yeah, so he had access to the most influential man in America all these decades, and would go and pray with them and talk about their spiritual lives with them. So this is because he had character, he had integrity. You know, he never had scandals. He was clearly very knowledgeable, very sincere. And people respected him universally, perhaps the most respected man in America. So he said, after, he was asked after 9/11, how could God allow this to happen? And he said, my entire life, people have been asking me this question, how God could allow suffering. And I have never been able to answer it to my satisfaction. Then he just went on to express that nonetheless, I continue to have faith. So this was a very honest answer, right? A profoundly honest answer. And it really made me appreciate Krishna consciousness, because we don't like suffering any more than anyone else, but at the same time we can explain it. You know, we can explain it in a very responsible way. I'm just getting the reactions of my own past misdeeds. That's all. I have no one else to blame. See, this is one of the things that happens when we suffer. One of the negative consequences, we tend to blame other people. Whoever was responsible for our suffering, whoever sent Krishna Kripa back with the key, oh, if they had given me the key, I wouldn't be in this pain. Especially in America, where we have 2/3 of the world's lawyers. You know, it's all about who you can sue, right? And if there's some misery, if there's some suffering, you'll get 5 phone calls from lawyers before you get to the hospital. You know, let me help you. You've had an accident. Don't settle for less than you deserve. Isn't it? So there's a great culture of blaming, trying to blame the other person. But this is, in fact, very contradictory to human health and mental health and psychology. Healthy psychology means I take responsibility. One of our friends, Peter Burwash, once tells a story about how he became a life member in ISKCON, Hawaii, and he gave the requisite fee of $1,000 to the life membership director, or I think the temple president, in fact. And the next day, the temple president left the temple with the money. Not to be seen again for some time, if ever. So Peter asked Srila Prabhupada, how am I to understand this? And Prabhupada answered very strongly. He said, anyone know what he said? Yes, do not blame the instrument of your own karma. Right. Do not blame the instrument of your own karma. So whatever suffering we undergo, whatever setbacks are there in our lives, the first thing to understand is that if we blame somebody else, we are just going to flunk the course and have to repeat. We're going to have to take it again because we have not got the lesson from this one. So a truly saintly person is endowed with the finest of all saintly qualities, which is what? Shema, which is forgiveness, yes. The ability to forgive others. Without understanding how karma works, we can't forgive others. If we go through some suffering and we think that this is just happening by some accident of nature, by God's neglect, and that we are being unfairly treated and punished, and that somebody has abused us. See, this mentality, which is a normal human response, conditioned soul's response to suffering, this keeps us from getting relief, real relief from our suffering. So that's how to respond to a setback. I am responsible for this. In fact, I'm just getting a little bit of the sinful reactions I was otherwise destined to receive. I'm very fortunate to be engaged in Krishna's service. By Krishna's grace, I'm getting just a token of what I would have otherwise received. Once a devotee was bitten by a spider and his legs swell up about double size. Very poisonous, very allergic, heavy allergic reaction. And he recovered, but he asked Prabhupada, how could Krishna let this happen? And Prabhupada said, if you were not a devotee, you would have lost your leg. So this is a way in which we can remain enthusiastic in our spiritual lives. Otherwise, if we have some cheating mentality that now I'm due, because I'm such a great spiritualist, I am due to material I have earned material happiness. See? Then we have missed the point. Krishna may make our lives very materially comfortable and full of happiness in every respect, or he may make our lives just one disaster after the next. That is in his care only. Janaka Pandit says that this is the quality that we learn from the dog. Now, I'm going to really hit your ego here, so fasten your seatbelts. You know, we wear these neck beads, and Prabhupada called them dog collars. So, what does it mean to be a dog? Well, what's that? Well, yes, to have a master. And not only to have a master, but to be unfailingly loyal to that master. The example is given that, ladies, if you were to lock your husband and your dog in the trunk of your car, which one of them would be happy to see you 4 hours later when you open it? So, of course, the husband would not be happy. The dog would be very happy. All is forgiven. So this is the quality of a dog. That yes, Krishna ashlishyava padaratam panashtumam. You may beat me, you may trample me beneath your feet. Adarshanam, you may be absent. You know, even though I'm chanting and I'm appreciating and I'm calling out for you, you may not show up. And you may also fool around with somebody else. See? I am doing all this chanting, but these people are getting all the money. You know? I'm doing all the chanting, but these people are healthy and I'm sick. You know? I'm doing all the chanting, but these people have nice marriages and mine just fell apart. Right? You know, Krishna, what's going on? You're not being very loyal to me here. See, this is lampata. This means a rogue, an unfaithful spouse. They go and have affairs on behind your back. See, so Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, you can do all of this, whatever you want, and still you are my worshipful Lord unconditionally. This is how devotees respond to a setback with realization. Krishna is not obliged to any kind of behavior towards me. This is not karmakanda, where I do some piety and then I get some nice reward and I do more piety. You know, this is devotional service, where I become Krishna's dog. Like the word das or dasi, we say it means servant, but it actually has a deeper implication. Servant means voluntary, right? It's more like slave. I am now the slave of Krishna. I am the property of Krishna. Just like a dog is the property of its master. So this unfailing loyalty, this is actually the quality of a dog. When the dog is fed, it eats. When it's not fed, it fasts. When the dog is beaten, it doesn't go away. It just cowers and shrinks back, but it stays put and asks itself in its little doggy brain, how can I please this guy? You know? It is for the dog's benefit. Sometimes the master will, if not hit, at least threaten, you know, to demonstrate superiority. So in the same way, with our ego so intense in this material world. We're thinking ourselves very, my body is so nice, my intelligence is so nice, my family is so nice, my abilities are so extreme, just no one has recognized them yet. You know, we're so proud that we cannot chant the holy name with feeling. You know, later in the first canto, we'll read this verse by Queen Kunti, where she says, Janmaishwarya Shruta Shribhir. Janmaishwarya means, Janma means being born in a very nice family. Aishwarya means opulence. Shruta means education. Shribhir means wealth. Janmaishwarya Shruta Shribhir. Edamana Madapuma. Twama Kinchana Gocharam. Somebody who has these things cannot chant very sincerely. They cannot, if they're on the path of getting these things, and they think this is what life's all about, they cannot call out to you with sincere feeling. So you are the property, she says, therefore, of the akinchana, of those who have no other assets or resources. See, this is all very difficult to swallow for our egos and for our material selves, conditioned selves, who are attached to some kind of comfortable life. The knowledge is that this material world is no place for enjoyment. The knowledge is that when bad things happen, Krishna is being very kind to us. The wisdom and the realization comes when we go through things and we persist in our Krishna consciousness. You know, when Krishna beats us to the point of utter humiliation, where we just have nothing left but the ability to say, oh, Krishna, you know, then we are very fortunate. Because if we carry that mentality around, even when things are going well, see, this is the path, this is the key to transcendence, to transcendental happiness, you know, to an enjoyment which is on a much higher level than any kind of material enjoyment. The key to opening that door is that beaten down ego, where we truly realize, meekly and humbly, I cannot control a damn thing in this world. That is the mentality that opens up the door to Krishna consciousness for us. It is all out of my control. Who do I think I am? I am a totally dependent speck of dust at Krishna's lotus feet. That is who I really am. So this is how to deal with setbacks. And if we deal with them in this way in advance, then we're actually prepared for them. If we're not able to do that, then Krishna will very kindly bring us some real doozies just to help us, you know, wake up. So in conclusion, Srila Prabhupada cites this verse that he said should be the motto of all devotees. Does anyone know which verse I'm referring to? Well, that is a very good one. But this one specifically he said should be the emblem. Yes. What was the phrase that he used? Was it the emblem, the motto? Can't remember. So this verse is spoken by Lord Brahma. We might have it on the screen. I don't know. Would you kindly look? 10:8:14, I believe. 10:10:14:8. Yes. So Lord Brahma had stolen all the cows and calves because he was getting annoyed. You know, all the demigods were making this big deal about this little boy Krishna who killed a gasura. They're showering flowers and beating drums and having a big party. And Brahma said, what is it? Who is this upstart? So he took the boys and calves just for a moment. And then he looked back, and there's Krishna with all the boys and calves that he just took away. And he said, what? What's going on? And then he looks and sees that they're all Vishnu forms, perfectly imitating the boys and calves. So then he said, oh, I made a big mistake. He returned the originals, and he came before Krishna. And although he never touches the earth, in this occasion he put all four of his heads on the earth at Krishna's lotus feet. And he said, and he spoke these beautiful verses extemporaneously. So this is one of them, number 8. If we can get the Sanskrit there, please, too. Yes. Tat te nukam pam. Yes. Tat te nukam pam sushramikshamano. Sushramikshamano. One who very earnestly, one who very earnestly remembers you. Very earnestly. When we get in difficulty and suffer, then it is an opportunity to become very earnest. Like there's a saying, there's no atheists. There are no atheists in foxholes. This is a saying from World War I. They would dig little holes in the ground for protection and then jump in, and the bullets are flying over their heads. And so there are no atheists in foxholes. Or I mentioned it at our chaplain's meeting, before final exams is a very good time to do religious activities, you know, because everyone has become very, they've got religion. Oh, God, if you'll just let me pass this exam. So, earnestness. Nukampam means mercy, so, or compassion. So, one who expects Krishna's mercy very earnestly, see, sushramikshamano, bunjana, means that they understanding that this is a result of my own activities. Bunjana evatma kritam vipakam. Very earnestly expecting Krishna's mercy. I know it's going to come. I'm not worried. It's definitely going to come. And whatever I'm undergoing right now is bunjana evatma kritam vipakam. This is my own sinful reaction. And scroll a little bit farther, please. Yes. See, bunjana, enduring, atmakritam, done by himself, vipakam, the fruitive results. Such a beautiful verse. Then, hrit vak vapurvir viditam namaste, offering obeisances from the core of the heart, with the words, with the mind, and with the body. Jiveta lives, sa, anyone who mukta pade to the position of liberation, sadaya bhak is the rightful heir. Okay, so basically it's saying if one lives in this way, they attain the kingdom of God. Okay, again, always expecting these three things, always expecting Krishna's mercy, accepting that all the suffering I'm going through is a result of my own activities, and offering respects to Krishna from the very core of my heart. Not blaming him, but still very meekly and humbly saying, Krishna is my friend. This person becomes the heir to the kingdom of God. Okay? Now, suppose you have a $5,000 problem. If you have no money, $5,000 is a huge sum. You know? It's a huge sum. If we have nothing, then we wonder, how can we possibly raise this $5,000 that we owe to somebody or that we need for something? But if we know we're going to inherit $1,000,000, then the $5,000 problem becomes, all right, I can handle that. Okay? So similarly, one who knows that they're going to go back to Godhead, then the problems of this world, yes, yes, yes. They're inevitable. Shock after shock, Prabhupada described the world as. Shock after shock. So, they're just going to come. I've got something much better coming. So all I have to do, what do you have to do to get an inheritance? You just have to stay alive. Yeah, you don't have to be, accomplish anything. You don't have to sing a song, tap dance. Win a prize on American Idol. You know, you don't have to do anything. You just have to stay alive. If you just stay alive, then you get your inheritance. So we just stay alive in Krishna consciousness. This is the way to do it. See? Realizing these three things, right? That I'm responsible that Krishna's mercy is coming at any moment, and therefore I'm going to continue to offer my respects to him. This way we have nothing to worry about. If we have no vested interest in enjoying this material world, no expectations, then we won't have any disappointments. All right, so any comments or questions?
Yes, Prabhu, I understand. For a person who is mature enough after practicing Krishna consciousness, begins to understand the three modes of material nature, karma and all that, yes, we are able to begin to understand that, yes, Krishna is working, this is my karma. Now, how do you present that same feeling or that same preaching to a child? How can we say it to a children, your mom has a terminal illness? How is it that, and in the past it's been used this by many abusers, it's your karma and you are being abused. So how can we present that to a child and make, I really, please explain that.
The child is in a different position because, at least up to a certain age, they're not responsible for their activities. The people who are their caretakers are responsible for them. That's what it means to be a child. So, of course, Narada Muni is only 5, but he, by the association of devotees, had this very deep realization. So if we say to a child, this is your karma, they will not be able to understand. So if we are their caretaker, we have to just give them comfort. We have to provide what they need. We have to show them that they are loved and help them feel secure. It is abusive to say, yeah, it's your karma, to somebody who cannot understand that. Even to the conditioned souls. See, if we just have that hard-nosed attitude, oh, you're suffering, well, that's your karma, you should have been chanting, you know. See, who's going to appreciate? That's not the quality of a saintly person, right? So, we have to do all we can to relieve the distress of others. At the same time, understanding our limitations in doing so. See, the fact remains, it is that child's karma. It is Krishna's mercy on them. And it's very hard for us to understand how or why it's happening. But we have to have faith that it's not happening by accident. And if we have faith, then that will automatically be conveyed to the child. You see? They will see that we're not exasperated by the situation. We're not giving up. We're not saying that, oh, well, God must not exist to do this to a child. I had a godbrother whose son fell down a flight of stairs and they had to rush him to the emergency room. He was seriously injured, although not critically. And it was just a toddler, maybe 2 or something. And the doctor said, poor kid, what has he ever done to anyone? And parents who were devotees, they were a little fanatic. They said, well, in his past life, he must have done all kinds of sinful things to get this. So this is not the attitude that will help the child or the doctor. See? So therefore, if we're actually interested in helping the person, we have to show compassion. But within ourselves, we have to understand still what is the truth.